This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is sponsored by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, today I have a fantastic guest, Bernadette Duncan, has written a delightful book called Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. Hi, Bernadette.
Hello, Patsy, and thank you so much for the invitation to be with you this hour.
Well, this is thrilling for me. As a famous radio producer, you have written a really fun little book here with all sorts of gossip and your back-scene stories of what it's like to be in a radio station, and I just love it.
Well, I imagine you would. You know, in our few email exchanges, you indicated that you've had a couple of wacky things happen as well. So,
a few, but nothing like yours. You know, actually, I'm a little bit, you know, intimidated by you because you have worked with, well, some of the most famous and greatest radio personalities of all time, and so I'm not sure how I'm going to be doing, and you can always just, you know, step in there and produce me.
Oh, no, Patsy, you know, the funny thing is that maybe they were famous, but I'm just a regular girl from Queens, New York, you know what I mean?
Well,
and I listen to you, and you're authentic, and that is beautiful. That's where you know you can start and be.
Well,
I
enjoy it so much. It's so funny. You know, I had never thought about being in radio, and for years and years I was reading and collecting books, and I've read certainly over 10,000 books, and I think I still have half of them. And my husband kept saying, as we moved from country to country, place to place, why are you carrying these books with you? And I said, well, I don't know, but they're useful. And wow, next thing I know, less than 2 years ago, I started this radio program, and it's so much fun to know I have all those books at my fingertips. And now I get at least 10 books a week from different authors ask me to promote their books. So it's really lots of fun.
Wow, that's wonderful. And you're doing a great service to have this niche kind of programming. You know, everybody else is talking politics, and you're talking about this meaningful, often heart-wrenching stuff that makes people human, you know, thanks to authors, if they can mold that all together.
Well, the authors love to tell this. The authors love to tell their stories. And I think it helps, you know, every reader has their favorite author, and for them to hear a little bit more about their author, to just have that connection, I think is so wonderful.
Yes, agree.
And it's funny, for me, what happened is when I started this program, as I said, I had no experience in radio, but in general, I probably had read every book that of the authors that I started interviewing, because I read like every book.
Wow.
And so sometimes I would get an author on. I had, I had Mary Higgins Clark on, and I was telling her, well, you know, in this book you wrote this. And she said, what? I wrote that? I said, yeah. I said, you did. That was in book number 3. You know, she said, oh, how do you remember these things? But I have one of those memories where if I sort of close my eyes for a few minutes, I can find the book in my head. And and so sometimes authors are really surprised that I know, you know, some of their books better than they do.
Wow. So you're a really good reader.
That's it.
You really consume the details.
That's what I am. And so it's just been a lot of fun. And of course, I didn't know all of the production side. And so it was so much fun for me when I was reading your book and I said, oh, wow, there are people back there who actually do all this work, you know, because being a small program, still I have to do most of the work myself. So it was fun to find out that there are people like you who do things.
Yes. And also, Patsy, you'd be surprised that there are also some of these big, gigantic hosts who also do a lot of legwork. Some of them actually do their own legwork as well. Some of them don't.
And some of them want you to do everything.
Yeah, but that's what I get paid for. Listen, I've had almost 30 years of a great career. How could I be disappointed or unhappy? And it continues just in very different forms at this point.
Well, so. I don't even know where to start, but let's start with Sally Jesse Raphael, because everybody knows her, and of course you worked with her quite closely.
Yes. So my book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers.
I love that title.
That's the big broad strokes. But it was Sally that basically threw me my lifeline into this career that I eventually entered. I was a teenager, and she was on the radio in my house where I was growing up. And one day, while all my friends were writing fan letters to all their rock star favorites, I wanted to write to Sally. And 2 weeks later, I was the only one who got a letter back. And it started me paying attention to her in a different way, because it was now really personal. Years later, I end up working at NBC Radio Networks, where she was doing a talk show at night. And I was down the hall and eventually had an opportunity to fill in for a sick producer and had an opportunity to work with Sally. She was part fairy godmother and part rascal. She was quite a colorful woman with adopted kids. And there was always a control room full of people laughing and just sitting around and enjoying her nightly show while she was on the other side of the glass. So
really from there, you what did you do for her as you became her?
Well, I became a fill-in producer on her show. I was a regular producer at NBC Radio Networks, but you know how it is. You know how to run the board. You know how to screen the calls. So I had opportunity to work with her and become a regular producer on her show. And then over the years, I would see her at various functions. But during the time as a producer, we were taking all sorts of phone calls. So she was of the era, you may recall that era of talk shows, where it wasn't very political. Yes, Rush Limbaugh was on the rise, but Sally was your, favorite aunt, your favorite neighbor over the fence. She was talking about family problems or awkward situations, or what do you do when, after you divorce, how do you go out dating for the first time? Or one of my wackiest phone calls was, what do I do with a dead horse that I found on my front lawn? just crazy stuff, because she was such a colorful woman. And though we knew she did not know the answer, we knew she would come up with something very colorful, even if it meant opening up the phones to listeners who would then come up with their own answers. She was colorful. And by the way, she's 81 and she's still doing all sorts of video podcasts online today. How do you like that?
That's fantastic. That's a wonderful thing about radio, and you can keep going.
Yes.
So it's not quite like television where they have to worry about every wrinkle. So you can just keep going, and I think that's a great thing. Now, when one of your jobs, of course, to screen calls is a talent in itself, because you want to get a balance of listeners' questions.
That's correct. And it's not only that, it is kind of an art. We were taught, at least, that there's an art. And frankly, my program director at the time said, think of it like you're playing music. You want happy, you want sad, you want a woman's voice, you want a man's voice, you want an age range. But then, of course, we had all these rules about the kinds of calls that you don't want, and that is someone with a very thick accent or a repetition of the same question, or, frankly, we were supposed to stay away from extremely old folks because of advertising that prefers a younger demographic, you know, demo. So that's the truth.
So when you, beside the call screening, of course, one of the big jobs of a producer is getting the guests.
That's right. We are hunter-gatherers, let's think of it. You know, it's one thing, you brainstorm on what the topic of the day or topics of the day would be. You do all the legwork, and then you set up your host. And as one of the guys used to say, we set them up, and the host knocks it, the story out. You know, you just keep setting it up like it's like you're on a conveyor belt. There's a lot of gathering factoids. I mean, you could just imagine what it must be like during this political season.
Oh, wow.
I had gone through so many of those. I was tracking down as many candidates as I could, Joe Biden, Mike Huckabee, Hillary herself. These were over the years, and the politicians, or there was also a kind of a strange phenomenon during the political season where the different, you know, the Democratic, officials had an in with Hollywood. So I was getting pitched guests like Cher and all sorts of celebrities who would come on to talk about whoever they wanted. George Clooney came on once. Could you imagine?
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It was amazing. But they figured it out. The DNC, the Democratic National Convention folks, realized that if they got celebrities, at least listeners are going to listen to George Clooney, among others. So
that was a fun part, to sort of get to talk to all of these famous people.
Yeah, it was fun, and it was also interesting because it came with layers of press people, handlers. Usually, like someone like Cher, though she was on the phone for about 2 hours or so, she had a handler, and it was the handler who called into the studio. And then when we were ready, she connected me to Cher, and I had to kind of talk Cher through the way to do what I'm doing with you, so that she would, know the host's name and kind of like idiosyncrasies of being a guest on a radio show. So sort of the basics. And then I would hear her, you know, making commands to her handler, like, please, I'd like a cup of tea or whatever, you know. Just it was such a window into the kinds of lives I wasn't normally booking. It was great.
When you were with Larry King, for example, now there you had all sorts of guests. I mean, from movie actors to politicians to authors. Did he decide on who he wanted to talk to, or did you come out with a list for him of suggestions? How did that work?
I love your question, Patsy, because he was an interesting kind of different sort of talk show host. He had, or in his team, about four producers. And the producers basically booked that show. They knew he liked exactly what you said, celebrities, politicians, authors. It was a People magazine on parade. And there wasn't a lot of, you didn't really have to ask him questions. And he was very honest with his listeners, as he was with us. And that is, he never read the books. And what we did was we would brainstorm a guest, give them a lineup, and then talking points. You'd give them a package of talking points, maybe the book. And I was a very young producer. I got very lucky, about 24, 25 years old. And I was the one, like basically the low guy on the food chain, and I was in the control room, and I would be handing him the package each guest got. I would walk in. I mean, you know, you'd think, what, does this take like a whole college, you know, degree? No, but it's a kind of people skill. And I would walk in the package to him, and he would then quickly scan the talking points, and then start his interview. And as you might have read in the book, Yappy Days, he didn't always know the whole background of a guest. So, and that got kind of interesting. And if you want, I could tell you that story.
Oh, go ahead. That's okay. Why we have you here.
Okay.
We want the inside dope on this.
Well, this was kind of, so this is like, this is basically connecting all the dots of all these questions you're asking me. So I'm sitting there. I handed him information or a little bit. He has a guest on the phone. So this particular guest happened not to be a celebrity, happened not to be a politician. She was an author, but not of a topic that Larry knew. This was an author of a book on childhood sexual abuse. And Larry was going to speak to her for 15 minutes, but it felt like it was going to be 15 years because I'm sitting there and I could see through the glass that this man is squirming in his chair. Now, again, to remind you, I'm a young producer. I'm new on the job. I think I had the job for maybe 2 weeks. And my boss had told me, whatever you do, you do not talk to him unless he speaks to you. You just be available to help out, you know, bring him coffee, walk the talking points into him. Well, I'm watching him squirm, and I'm hearing the voice of my boss, like, whatever you do, don't talk to him. I had to make a judgment call, and I speak into the little earpiece, the little talk back button, into Larry's earpiece, because I had read 17 magazine for years. And I talked into his earpiece, and I said, okay, Larry, ask, at what point when you're dating somebody do you tell them about your history? And all of a sudden, he looked at me, and out from his mouth came the words, at what point when you're dating somebody do you tell them about your history? I nearly fainted, because all of a sudden, my 24-year-old mind is thinking, oh my gosh, he just said my words across 350 stations around the country. I was shocked. And that started a few more questions over the course of those 15 minutes, and my life changed, because I realized I could be I could be an important part of a team. And, you know, I'm a middle child. I'm a good team player, and I found my place.
Wow. So. And that, yeah, it's exactly these kind of little stories in this book, Yappy Days, that make it so much fun to read. You know, everybody always likes, like on my program, I like to get the story behind the book, why an author wrote the story, where it came from in his mind. Was it from his childhood? Was it from an encounter? I just spoke to a man yesterday, Matt Haig, who wrote a book called Boy Called Christmas. And his son gave him the idea. And wow, in just 5 minutes, he had the whole story in his head to write a story about where you know Santa actually came from. And so it was a fascinating thing of how you find out the story behind the story, and that's why Yappy Days is lots of fun. You know, I'm going to take a little break here, and then when I come back, we're going to talk about I'm going to throw some names at you, and you can share some of the stories and just tell us, you know, about these people, because all of my listeners are always interested in knowing more about famous people. So we'll be right back, okay?
You got it.
You hold on.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572 6345 or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with Bernadette Duncan, the author of Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Smoozers, Boozers, and Losers, a story about life behind the scenes of a radio station. I love that title.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about David Letterman.
Yes, it was probably one of the more surprising experiences for me as a young producer was, again, Larry King, because you see him on TV every night as this outgoing, funny guy, and he's actually extraordinarily shy. The night he joined Larry King and he came across the street from the studios, he was new now to the CBS network, and came across the street to where we were broadcasting Larry's show, and he was surrounded by all these handlers, Though I did not know it was him, he had a baseball cap pulled down in front of his face. And they marched right into the studio. He sat down in the guest's seat, and he had his back to me, an engineer producer, for the whole hour, the entire hour. I could not even read his face. I couldn't tell if he was whatever. And when you're a producer, you kind of have to monitor how people are doing through any sort of facial cues, right? But he was very shy. Surprising.
Yeah, he doesn't look like he's shy, you know.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Now, tell me, when did any of the famous people, did they ever give you gifts?
Wow. Not that I can really recall. Now, I love what you're asking. Usually it would not be from them. It would be from their press person, meaning, let's say, Fox Television. You know, they were always schmoozing. You know, that's part of the blurb of this Yappy Days book. They're schmoozing you, right? They want to be sure you're friends toward their network. So the Fox Television Network actually schmoozed us producers. And, like, during the holidays, they would be sending us cookies in tins that, you know, featured their brand name. During the whole American Idol, when that was really, really, really hot, those guys were schmoozing us also, because I would always be able to get every time someone lost, they'd come on my show the next day on our morning show. So gifts would be more likely from the networks or the TV or the radio or the movie studios, even the publishing houses once in a while.
What about Larry King? Did he ever give you anything that you didn't want?
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, I don't know if I would call it a gift. Patsy, you're sneaky. But basically, again, I'm 24 years old, so I'm a young person. I'm
and very pretty. Very pretty.
Well, I was awkward. Trust me, Patsy. I was a very awkward, nerdy kid, and I'm working the overnight shift. So where I was very comfortable, but working with him, the only thing he gave me that I actually never really talked about it until I was writing this book was he actually, during the top of the hour news, two years into my working with him, came in and planted a kiss on me, shocking me. I was totally... I don't even have the words. I was just shocked. And I got out of that situation physically. And he actually went back into the studio, never talked about it. I never talked about it. And it was as if it never happened, strangely enough. But you know what happens, Patsy, if you're like me, and you know, I'm a producer, so I'm constantly, you know, rifling through magazines, newspapers, and then years later, thanks to Google, boy, have I read stories about other women that he, let's say, got to...
He gave them a gift.
Yes, he gave them a gift. Yes, stay in that theme. And, you know, what can I say? It was, you know, we're all growing up in many ways, and...
Well, who knows? You know, if you had accepted the gift, you might have been... Wife number 8 or 9 or...
Oh, well, that time it would have been wife number 6, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I worked with him between 6 and 7.
It's still mind-boggling that so many women would marry him. But anyway, you know, it's oh, sorry. I don't know if I should say that. Oh, anybody... Oh. I mean, that's what happens when one reads your book. One sort of gets in this mode of thinking. It's funny. Your book is funny. You know, I just, I'm not sure where to start because everything you write is you know, you have all these little amusing anecdotes, and I want readers to buy the book and read it. But we'll talk about a few things, a few of the people and a few that surprised me, like Jerry Springer. I did not realize how what he was like, because I sort of have been off put by his antics on television, and I never really thought of him as being intelligent. But you saw a different side.
Right? Isn't that something? Yeah, it was just an amazing thing. And again, it goes back to you never know anybody. Even when they come into the studio, you don't know them. But in these cases, like Letterman or Jerry Springer, Jerry Springer was such a warm, gentle, such a good-hearted soul, and had such gratitude about his life. And then, as a producer, I had done research about him before he came in, and I discovered he wasn't even American. He came from, I think, from England. Came across on, I guess it was like the Queen Mary or something, and he made this amazing life for himself. At one point, he was even mayor of Cincinnati. This was, a man who treasured his American life and spoke about it as a guest, as he had opportunity to live the American dream. And in person, he was just a very nice man. And you know this is his life philosophy. But look, he had an amazing career. It was a little kind of wacky on his reality crazy Jerry Springer show that required that they even had police officers nearby because it was just so out of hand. But why not? I mean, he made himself a great career and a household name.
And exactly, so you do what you need to do, I guess, and he certainly has made himself a program that's very successful.
Yes.
Oh wow. I love that. I don't watch afternoon television, but when I after I read this book, I was thinking about the courtroom. All of these judges now that we have, Judge Judy, Judge this one, Judge that, they have $1 million contracts. And of course, you worked on one of these judge shows.
Yes, I had a great opportunity to work on with Judge Mills Lane. He was a Nevada judge. You might remember him as also working as a referee in boxing. So people knew him. He had that kind of quirky. He was a boxing referee and a judge. Okay. But interestingly, he sat on a TV bench in New York City, which I found fascinating as a producer, because I'm thinking, okay, well, what's the law here? And he actually followed his Nevada law. But as a producer on a show like that, I was a field producer, they called us. So I actually went, and I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I actually went to courthouses where I would meet other producers like me. We were all going through the docket, hoping to nab a real colorful character, and which was usually, you go through, you rifle through these files, and you find family situations, the ones that are going to be blood-curdling angry. You kind of got a sense of, oh, this is an ex-boyfriend, or this is an ex-girlfriend, or a family member. Like, I remember a brother and sister lawsuit about who was going to pay for their parents' coffin. It's just horrible, but whatever. Like, the guest, the litigant, would actually have their case paid for either way. So they would be interested, and they were put up in a hotel in New York City. So there was a lot of, and they got a flight to New York City. So there was a lot of, TV offers a lot of nice little, bangles and things. So
now when,
interesting.
Now when, of course, I think that would be fun just to be able to dig through court files. I think that's sort of a fun thing to get paid to do.
Yes, it's very dirty back there. I mean, both, it's like crazy. what people are wanting to sue for. There was a whole section in the courthouses. I was in Hollywood, Beverly Hills, Santa Monica. I was up I went up to all over California. And there was a whole section in each of those courthouses of cases that was never going to make it even to the courtroom because it was just so crazy. A woman suing because she had what she called a shoulder-eating bra strap. So she was trying to sue the company. And then there was someone suing a supermarket for bones in their boneless steak. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And you get a crazy window into human nature and greed and kind of victimhood. I mean, all these kinds of things that make us human, but some people more than others.
So. Well, I see a behind-the-scenes novel there that you should be writing, and it would be funny. I like that section. Now, when I was reading, of course, as I said, you booked so many people for interviews over the years, and did any famous people ever say no, rejected an interview request?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure, I mean, Patsy. Plenty said no, but it's my belief that you really work, you're constantly working, you're constantly schmoozing. I dedicate a whole chapter in Yappy Days on schmoozing, because basically that's what you got to do. If I saw someone walking down the street in New York City and I could dangle my CBS or ABC press identification, I would, because it's hard finding people. And I would collect people like Connie Chung, who I met in the bathroom on the sixth floor of CBS. She schmoozed me. She introduced herself to me in the bathroom, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, man, you know, if I play my cards right one night, I may need to tap into her as a guest. But famous people, I can tell you that during the political season, I went after every candidate, and I did not give up. I never heard back from Hillary Clinton, not to besmirch her. I did get every Monday for 4 months from Vice President to be Joe Biden. And Mike Huckabee was such a sweet pea of a guest. He was a regular guest, and this fed into, okay, so he never became president, but boy, did he have a radio personality. Only then did I discover this guy used to be a radio weatherman, weather boy. He was a young fellow in Arkansas. But what a great guy. He never said no. He always showed up on time. And if I said to him in his ear, hey, Mr. Huckabee, I need you out in like 20 seconds, he was out in 19. So you get these, of course, are the ones who said yes, but that's, you know, I had to develop a Teflon skin. I didn't take anything personally because, you know, the following week, if Hillary needed to be on our programs, she would be. So you're constantly working the phone. You're constantly working it. And, of course, people will bail out on you at the last minute. So you had to have the people that you could call at the last minute. And I had a bucket full of those too.
Well, the first time that happened to me, I was going along. I got my first guests, and I was lucky enough that I don't know, it was just a moment of inspiration that my first guest was Irene Goodman, a literary agent in New York City, one of the top literary agents. And and she was so kind to come on my first program, and I actually was so nervous I didn't know what to say to her. But since she gets paid like $30,000 to be a keynote speaker at all these writers' conventions, she sort of took over the program, and she was just great. And then from there, I had a steady stream of guests, and I was doing okay. And it never occurred to me at that point. I was into like 3 months. And no point had I ever thought, what happens if they don't come on as scheduled? I mean, it never occurred to me. I never thought of it. And then suddenly after 3 months, it happened. And I was like, I mean, I was in shock. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't think straight. Luckily, I have a great guy in the control room. And
Big Ed, right?
Yeah, yes. Actually, Bernadette and Patsy, I just wanted to enlighten you guys. You were talking about producers and stuff, some of these TV shows that I had the fortune, or it was kind of somebody was a misfortune. We spent a couple episodes on Dr. Phil, and I got to tell you that, it wasn't for me, it was to get somebody else some help, but I had arranged the whole thing. But I got to tell you that I was in awe of the fact that the way I was treated, my family was treated, whatever. We could have been movie stars or whatever. From point A of calling and doing the back work and everything, getting the flights. I mean, they wanted us 3 days out there. They paid for whatever time off from work we might have missed. They put us up in the best hotel on Hollywood Boulevard, the meals were paid for, and you know, there were cars there to pick you up, and you know, the pre-tape interviews, they would just guided through this like they knew you for 10 years. I got to tell you, it was just, although everything, most of the things came out the way we wanted on the show. And then you watch the show from there on out and you see guest stars like Steve Harvey and everything. And you wonder, did they treat them any better? No, we were all treated the same. We're all just treated like royalty. And I think that's, a great star to them that those people that are behind the scenes too.
Well, that's nice. That's for sure. And that's exactly what Bernadette was doing, because she was always, you always had to make sure that you had what the guests wanted, right?
Oh, definitely. You want to keep your guests happy and the host. So you're the middle guy, right? But I love what Ed is saying, because it always speaks, at least for me, to how TV has a bigger, party bag to offer its guests, because we never did that in radio. You had to schmooze them, and you knew you were going to be doing it, helping them out with if they were promoting a movie, a TV show, or a book or whatever. But very interesting, Ed. That's a great sounds like a book in the making.
Well, in radio, you don't have to worry about hair and makeup,
right?
And wardrobe or anything like that. But there was a whole process that we actually went through. I've never done anything like that, but I can tell you, I felt like a 10-year vet, because you had every person had a step. And you went to that next step. You went to that next step, and by the time you were out on that stage and everything's following smoothly. Although I got a little nervous because we're taping and we would go to break. This was taped, and we go to break. We were on break for 30 seconds, and being in radio, and I'm noticing that we're now on the stage for an hour and a half. I'm like, this is not an hour show here. So it wound up being a two-day episode. But from the first phone call probably to the last, I had a great time. I messed with the producers a little bit because I had to. When they'd call me at 6 a.m. and say, hey, Ed, the car's downstairs waiting for you, and I'd text him back, is that this morning? Oh, no. And I would wait 5 minutes and then text them back saying, just kidding, I'm downstairs.
Oh, man.
And I know that for those guys, they're like 5 minutes of hell. Oh, no, everything's going to be late now.
Well, Ed.
Wow.
Ed is a very special person, and it always makes me feel so comfortable to have him there on the other side of the glass. And, it's an amazing business, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, you were saying earlier, Patsy, that you had people not show up or something happens at the last minute. And one of the notions I was taught early on was expect the unexpected. Of course, that can mean anything. And, a guest not showing up, that's why I always had my little list of five people, what my husband Michael Harrison calls media exhibitionists. Five people who would come on and never said no, like Danny Bonaducci. Walter Cronkite was the first guest on the Tom Snyder radio show. The first night, the first guest during the first hour. And at the end of that segment, he said to me, take my phone number. I love doing this show. Anytime you need
I guess, falls out, you just call me up. And I'm thinking, Walter Cronkite has given me his phone number? This is so cool. But always be prepared, even for the unexpected, which, of course, is a paradox, but, you know.
Well, now I'm a little bit more experienced, and as a matter of fact, I just got Robert Tannenbaum. He is taping some little segments for me, you know, little filler segments, so that when I have a problem, I can pull them up. And of course, being in New York, you probably remember him. He was the DA of New York City, and of course, he writes a wonderful, wonderful series of books. So I was so thrilled when he accepted my invitation to be a guest contributor, and that way I have some fillers all the time, because you do get this this sick feeling in your stomach when these little emergencies pop up.
Now, and they do.
Oh, they do.
You know, in reference to, like, even with Sally Jesse Raphael earlier in this hour, we had what was called evergreens. Charlie Osgood had evergreens, and that's the term, the lingo for pre-taped segments, like what you're just talking about, Patsy. It buys you time. It buys you time, because you can call me anytime. I'll be glad to chat up with you. This is fun.
Okay, I'm putting you on my list. I'm putting you on my list, and because it happens, and it's scary.
Yeah. We're sisters now, Patsy. We're sisters. We're radio sisters. And Ed.
Oh, and we've got a big brother here in Ed. That's great. That's wonderful.
Exactly.
Well, I will make sure that Ed's got you on speed dial, because these things happen. Well, just 2 weeks ago, here I'm waiting for this very famous author. I've been prepping and promoting her appearance and talking it up for a month, and she's in California. She slept late. She was supposed to be on, you know, she slept, didn't answer the phone, didn't, she completely, you know, missed the whole thing. And I'm like, oh boy.
right. Well, at least that's a kind of a nice excuse. I was horrified when I've had guests who just walked out. John Ashcroft, Madeleine Albright, they decided they had enough, and that was it. They got up, walked out the studio, and that was it. And I had 40 minutes, and, you know, a good host can vamp. But it doesn't mean I didn't try to schmooze them to stay in the seat, but the seat was too hot for them. You find out, and you learn, and you grow. You develop a couple of muscles.
Exactly. I've only had one guest who didn't want to talk. I mean, okay, you are on a talk radio program. Talk. Open your mouth. I could not believe it. I was like, actually, I not exactly kicked him, but I did sort of step on his foot, because, I mean, I was getting really annoyed. Everything I would ask, and although we had talked several times beforehand, and he was, you know, all, oh, I'm going to say this and I'm going to say that. And he was like telling me what he was going to do. And then when he gets in here, he was like not talking. Now, he wasn't an author. He was supposed to be an expert on a subject related to publishing. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do with this guy?
that's very tough when you get a guest who basically kind of does yes, no answers. It's tough, but if you have a couple of seconds, I could tell you Tom Snyder always found a way through that. He was an amazing, as the New York Times called him, performance artist. And part of our job as producers was to find, like, kind of oddball little quirky details about a guest, like Catherine Bell. She was an actress at the time during the 90s in a show called JAG.
Oh, I love that show.
Well, right? And she was studying Scientology. Okay, that was quirky. But she was also the daughter of a Persian mother and a British father. And so she had all these kind of quirky things. She had a scar on her neck that she never covered, because she kind of had this fantasy image of herself of being like a motorcycle babe, you know? But what a great sense of humor about herself. You know, everybody knew her as an actress, but did you know she was a Scientologist? Well, no. Tom focused on that, and he really got her going, and it was just talk about personality profile. He never said no to any guest, even the ones that showed up drunk or on drugs. Because, as he would say, because you know what he did, Patsy? He turned to the audience, and he would say, like, in particular, the ones that were, like on drugs, he'd say, folks, some nights, this is a really tough job. And he actually engaged the listener, because we have listeners. And you have to, that's who we're talking with as well.
Well, you know, you're as you are now have agreed to come back, because you're going, there's so many stories to tell. And I'll just tell you about my upcoming show on Thursday. It's one that you will really appreciate, because it's funny. It's going to be a relay. I've never done this before, where I'm going to have four writers write it in a row, talking about the same book. Lawrence Block, the famous writer and Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster, came out with the idea to have a do an anthology based on Edward Hopper's paintings. And so each of he invited 17 famous authors, his friends, to each write a story based on one of the paintings. And it's called In Sunlight or in Shadow, and it's just coming out. And so on Thursday, I'm going to have keep Big Ed busy, because he's going to have to call one after another, and I'm going to do, you know, 10-minute, 12-minute segments with four of the authors in a row. And I've never done that, and I hope they all answer the phone. So
it sounds fabulous. That's creative. That's really, that's great. Listeners, I'm sure, are going to love it, right, you guys? They're going to love
that. Yeah, because it's just so much fun to do, and I'm it's a wonderful book, and I'm going to tell you to buy it too. It's called In Sunlight or in Shadow, and it's on sale, pre-orders, just for $20. It's amazing, and it has all of Edward Hopper's paintings in full color. Beautiful book. So I was so happy that Larry Black's been on my program a couple times, and because I really love his work, and he's very generous with his advice to writers. And so I always like to have him on, and I was thrilled that he sent me a copy of this book, which is beautiful. And
fabulous.
Now I have to say bye to you for now, but I mean really for now, and because it's, you're going to be back, that's for sure.
Aw. And well, it was a pleasure. Thank
because we
so
have to
much,
hear more
Patsy.
About this Madeleine Albright walking out on you business. This is rude, rude, rude. So
thank you, Patsy.
Okay,
thank you,
well,
Ed.
Thank you so much. And it's just been absolute joy to talk to you, Bernadette Duncan. And your book is?
Yappy Days Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, available on Amazon.
It's a great book, a fun, fun book. So thanks again, and bye-bye for now, but talk to you soon, okay?
You got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, we're off and running, and Ed's playing my music, and we're just going to say goodbye, and just remember to join me on Thursday. And meanwhile, find your joy and share it and say something nice to somebody today. And get this Yappy Days. It's funny. Oh, there's lots of political stories in there you'll love. Bye.